A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on August 13, 2000, in the series Religion, Significant Critique and Fresh Expression, entitled When God Dies... The texts for the sermon are Psalm 42 and Romans 1, verses 16 through 23. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
We have for a few weeks been considering the significant criticism of religion that came to expression in the 19th century. In order to understand it, in order that we might find fresh expression for the reality of the experience of God. It is really not possible, I think, to find a fresh expression that will be adequate for the 21st century unless we have some understanding of the developments of the modern period, particularly in the 19th century, in philosophical and theological discussion. And we have seen that what came to expression in that 19th century was the realization that religion is a human construct. Now, of course, the faith communities fought that idea, claiming rather a divine revelation and pretty much a ready-made religion that has come out of heaven. But the insight of the 19th century certainly is true. Religion is a human construct. And from all that we know today about the origin and the function, the nature of religion, all that we know about historical development, really it is quite foolish to deny that religion is a human construct. This was the insight of the 19th century, and on the basis of that, Ludwig Feuerbach said that, as a matter of fact, God was nothing but an illusion, that God was a projection of the human fears and hopes and aspirations. God, so to speak, created in our own image. And that assumption or that declaration became the assumption on which the 19th century rested. Religion, a human construct? Yes. And then following from that, therefore, God, a human projection. And as a matter of fact, no one home in the universe. Nobody home. Nobody out there, so to speak. No counterpart to that human projection and aspiration. Now, it would be very foolish for us to try to deny that religion is a human construct. But once one has assented to that, it does not follow that no one is home. For the religions as human constructs are our human response to the mystery that encounters us, that upholds us, that permeates all of reality and encounters us in our human existence. So we won't deny that our religion is a human construct. But if we will continue to be religious, we will do it on the basis of our conviction that human construct, for better or for worse, is a means, an agency, a medium by which we come into communion with that ultimate mystery of things, that infinite and inexhaustible ground of all being, that source, guide, and goal of all that is. That, of course, is the issue. And to bring that to fresh expression is our intention. To hear the significant criticism, and then to find a way to say, God, nonetheless. The 19th century came to its climax in the work of Friedrich Nietzsche. Nietzsche, who is known for nihilism. Nothing means anything. Nihilism or nothingness. No foundation, no meaning, no purpose, just the chaos and the chance of reality as it exists. Nietzsche died 100 years ago this month, August 25, 1900. He is famously known for his claim, God is dead, to which he added, we have killed him. Nietzsche's last decade of his life was one of misery and terror. He moved into insanity, and he died a pathetic and broken person. He was buried next to his Lutheran pastor father, his wife's father, or his mother's father and grandfather, likewise Lutheran pastors. So he came out of the rich soil of Protestant Christian faith and experience. He came to draw the conclusion of his analysis of reality that God, the God of his tradition, the God of his Western civilization, of his Christian tradition, was dead. And Nietzsche had the courage to draw the conclusion, the implications of the death of God. It is rather typical of pulpit rhetoric at this point to say, you see what happens when you deny God, and that would be to miss the point altogether. For this sensitive and brilliant thinker who came to conclude that God was dead found it an anguishing understanding. Thomas Altheiser, who was one of the leading death of God theologians in the 60s, wrote of the present, the contemporary situation, as a new chaos, a new meaninglessness, brought only by the disappearance of an absolute or transcendent ground, the very nihilism foreseen by Nietzsche as the next stage of history. Nietzsche foresaw it, and it drove him mad. Nietzsche said, how much must collapse now that this faith has been undermined? Because it was built upon this faith, propped up by it, grown into it. For example, the whole of European morality. Nietzsche looked at it all, opened his mind to every bit of knowledge and understanding available, and drew the conclusion that God, as God had been conceived, was dead, and he was horrified by the thought. Thomas Altheiser wrote also, no honest contemporary seeker can ever lose sight of the very real possibility that the willing of the death of God is the way to madness and dehumanization. And after the war, a Jewish thinker, Richard Rubinstein, wrote a book, After Auschwitz, in which he said, no one can believe in God after Auschwitz. And he wrote, the ambiguity, the irony, the hopelessness, and the inevitable meaninglessness of the time of the death of God. If I am a death of God theologian, it is with a cry of agony. So what we have in these particular thinkers and in this particular development is a conclusion in the light of the critical rationality of the modern period. The kind of knowledge that all of us take for granted in the world in which we live. A world of scientific breakthrough, of technological advance, of historical understanding of human development, of the behavioral sciences, of sociology and anthropology, all the knowledge available to us. These particular thinkers said, God is dead. That is, the traditional God as conceived of in Western civilization and in Western Christendom does not exist. If you think about it for a moment, we've noted how in the early dawn of humankind, with consciousness dawning, religion was a part of that dawning human emergence. And to begin with, paganism or primitive forms, however you want to call it, conscious of their vulnerability before the forces of the universe, created religious systems whereby the forces of nature being personified and deified were worshipped, sacrifices offered, prayers offered, in order to find security in this very insecure universe. Religion had a great deal to do with the securing of the human being coming to consciousness. And that vulnerability of being human is in large measure the origin of that early religious expression. And then, of course, with the development of the great monotheisms, one God, creator of all, governor of all, provident ruler of all, the omnipotent, omniscient God, that particular God became the ground of morality. Moses' vision of God issued in the Ten Commandments. For all religion, as it emerged and developed, began in a founding experience, a certain understanding or teaching or dogma, ways of ritual and worship, and a way of life. And if God is dead, then on what authority does one base one's morality? Nietzsche said, God is dead. And now everything is permissible. Not that he was advocating that, but he was saying the whole foundation is gone. Without that absolute transcendent ground, then the whole of European morality as we've known it is gone. We are free floating. And it was a terrifying thought for Nietzsche. Indeed, it drove him mad. But he was one of those who, seeing what he saw, had the courage to draw the implication. There are not many in the human family who, seeing deeply and profoundly, have the courage to draw the implication when it leads to the abyss. Better that the people go blindfolded or in their naivete than to dare to tell them the truth, which could lead to chaos. But the 19th century was a watershed. And those who would think deeply and clearly and ruthlessly must come to terms with the claims of modern knowledge. Not that one will find God at the end of the scientific quest, for example, for we're in two different worlds. But the religious experience must at least be conceived of in terms of our broadest understanding of reality. Otherwise, our head is in the sand, or we go through life blindfolded, or we go through life fearfully denying what is there on the horizon. Nietzsche said God is dead. And in the 1960s, they said, that's where we are. But that never came to very much, because there was such strong reaction to it, because it's such a scary business. There have been responses on the part of the Christian community. For example, if you have any experience with the Roman Catholic tradition, you know that that tradition still in the 21st century tries to operate authoritatively, authoritarianly, still tries by fiat, by the teaching office of the Congregation for the Faith, to convince the faithful of what is true and what is not true. But authoritarianism has been thrown off in the modern period, and I cannot conceive of it finally ever gaining its foothold again. And then there's the global phenomena which Harvey Cox has documented, to which I've referred in his book, Fire from Heaven, telling about that global phenomenon of Pentecostalism. Everywhere in the globe, there are people who are having the experience of God in an ecstatic experience. They are experiencing God apart from their rational faculties. They're experiencing at the gut level, if you will, highly emotional and very satisfying temporarily. The thing about emotional fixes is that you have to have it fixed again and again and again. It's not a criticism of anyone who finds their mode, their capacity to operate through that means, but certainly for us who have as well reasoning faculty, it's not enough. Pentecostalism is working. It's working its way in a world that became arid through the intellectualism and the skepticism of the 19th century. I suppose it arose in reaction to the claim that God is dead. But Pentecostalism will not work for some of us. Bless those for whom it works. And then, of course, there is the reaction of fundamentalism. Fundamentalism would like to claim to be the old faith, but actually it's a relatively new faith. It is a reaction to modernity. It is a reaction to Feuerbach and Marx and Freud and Nietzsche. It is a reaction to the liberal Christian church that tried to accommodate the insights of the 19th century into an understanding of the Christian faith. But fundamentalism cannot long persist because it lives by assertion. It lives by saying it over and over and more loudly, and simply to affirm doesn't make it true. The Evangelism 2000 conference, which recently ended in Amsterdam, with some 10,000 evangelists from around the world gathered by Billy Graham as his last great effort. What came out of that, again, establishes fundamentalism, Jesus Christ alone, the only Savior of the world, and all that goes with that exclusive claim. I do not believe it is where Billy Graham is personally, but there were even 10% of the 10,000 who signed a document even more rigid than the conference statement itself. Well, if you are an evangelist, wouldn't you like to have it true that you alone had the only key to the truth, to the salvation of the world? If there are other ways, suddenly your particular calling is relativized somewhat, and I suppose one can understand that that may be the last place in the world where the implications of the interfaith dialogue will be expressed. But not only that particular conference, we have in the whole area of Christian, quote, Christian science. Isn't it amazing that in the 21st century there's still controversy about evolution and creationism? And there are people who are very intelligent who are giving all of their energy and all of their minds to the establishment and the buttressing of a literalistic view of an ancient book that was a marvelous mythological presentation of the creation of the world. It is very difficult for me to understand that. And I do not believe that that can possibly prevail. But in our society, in our day, creationism is a living issue. And that whole effort cannot succeed in the long run, in the light of day, before those who would be open to pursue the truth through the use of critical judgment. I used in the title a small g for God because it's not God who has died, but God has died. The respective two small images of God that come to expression in the various religious understandings of the world. Western Christian, Protestant faith in the God who is still the governor, creator, governor, omnipotent, omniscient, ruler of all, that God is the God that the death of God theologians said was dead. That is the God that Nietzsche said was dead. But to say that a particular image or conception of God is dead is not to say that God is dead. It is to say nothing about that ultimate ground of being that emerges or surrounds or embraces or it comes to expression in the creativity of the Spirit in the midst of that cosmic flow of things. That God of traditional Protestant expression that God is dead. I experienced the death of that God yesterday at the funeral of my sister. In my own home environment, from the place from which I emerged, I was very much a stranger, very alien. The expression of piety in that funeral was far, far more emotional, sentimental than anything I had grown up with. Mine was a much sterner expression of Dutch mystical pietism. But that has moved in my home territory, where my family still worships, to a kind of expression filled with emotion. In the musical expression, in the open mic testimony, in the statements of the pastor. And what I noted was the frequent use of "we know, we know, we know." And I wanted to say, you tell me so often how much we know because I suspect you're trying to convince yourself that it's true. I had to admit that the God of my childhood is dead. That God will not serve for me. I don't begrudge anyone an expression of faith that is satisfying and comforting. But I know that that God for me is dead. And that God will not bring fresh expression to the 21st century, to a world that is more and more breaking open in the wonder and the mystery of it all. The God of my childhood died. But God has not died. I read Psalm 42 and I identify with that, don't you? My soul longs for God, for the living God. When will I come and appear before God? Oh God, my soul is cast down. Why have you forgotten me? I long, I yearn for the experience of God. Hope thou in God. I shall yet praise him, my God and my Lord. That expression, why, it touches me as deeply as it did the psalmist. But it's a God conceived quite other. Quite normally, naturally, it should be. Because of the tremendous explosion of knowledge, of reality, of the world, of the human being, of social reality, of course the image is different. And when I use the old phrases or sing the old hymns, I can do it understanding it as poetry, as the imagery of a generation of faith that preceded me, that handed faith to me. But if I want to give expression, I've got to find new language. And that's not easy to do. But if I'm not honest with that, if I cannot say, and as I said yesterday, it was so starkly, startlingly true to me, that God is dead. In the emotionalism, in the grieving, in all of that, in what was a marvelous testimony to my sister. Nonetheless, it was a language I can no longer use. And I'm not willing to say then, God is dead. Only a small g, God is dead. And God continues to be the mystery toward which my soul longs, longing still for living waters. When God dies, if it's the God of the small g, no need to panic. Trust. Wait. Nietzsche said, I live between two ages, one that is dead and one powerless to be born. We haven't moved very far. We're still between. Most of us are not ready to give up the old. For some of us who have had to do that, the new is not at all clear. But if I trust God, I can wait in hope, in the darkness, with the longing of my life, reaching toward the mystery that is beyond us and beneath us and permeated through all of us. That is our quest.